For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number to call in is 844-320-4299, and we're going to have a little unique forum today because I've had the producer engineer extraordinaire actually watch my presentation that I gave on movie night last August 9th, or just a little less than a month ago, next week it'll be over, but anyway, so he's watched it and he's written down some questions that he's kind of popped up into his head as he's watched these things. So we'll have this discussion. So you're more than welcome to call in if you've seen it or you have questions or what have you. And that number again is 844-320-4299. Again, if you haven't heard, this show's rebroadcasting on Saturday. It's usually at 1 o'clock because of the Whitworth football games. It's being broadcasted right after the end of the football game, which is basically around 3 o'clock. So if you don't get a chance to listen to this entire show today, by all means, you can just tune in at the end of your sports delirium and delight in listening and, you know, rooting for Whitworth to win again, because they just won last week to a perennial. Apparently, I guess the team that they played has never lost in a long time. So, you know, we went all the way to Iowa to school them. But anywho, if you can't listen to this show, then by all means, you can always listen to the rebroadcast, or you can catch the podcast, as I always say. And that's at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. Many of these shows actually dovetail and synchronize with each other and cross-reference and so forth. So for you to understand some of the stuff that I go through that I may not completely explain, if you listen to this whole show, everything, Platonist and so forth, because I use that a lot, will make sense to you, and the origins of some of these words, terms, and how they interrelate with each other. Consequently, to stay abreast with what I'm doing and what is Republic Review and what we need to do to take back our Constitution, you really do need to download and listen to these podcasts. So again, the podcasts are at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. And in doing so, you will learn what it's going to take for us to reclaim the Republic together. On local announcements, if you don't remember, Councilman Ed Pace of Spokane Valley, he's the city councilman, he will be hosting the following town hall events every week. And I just want to make sure you know this, that he actually hosts every Wednesday at 9 in the morning at the McDonald's on University and Sprague, a town hall meeting. He also has a town hall meeting at 9 in the morning at Forza Coffee on Sullivan and 4th. And on Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock at the Rosars on University and Sprague. And that's every Saturday morning. And these are all his town hall events. And so if you want to get engaged and listen and participate every Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday at these locations, that's where you can have a great opportunity to meet with and engage with Councilman Ed Pace. Republican Coffee Club, 7 a.m. This Friday is Ron Houston, I think. Forgive me, everybody, if I ever mispronounce your name. It's nothing personal. It's just that I try to make sense of some of our, even my own name trips me up. That's why I go by GR. So anyway, He'll be speaking on the Spokane Fatherhood Initiative on the 15th. Former city councilman, this is a tough name too, Mike Allen, former city councilman, it will be speaking on entrepreneurship. And on September 22nd, Jake McCulley from the Institute on the Constitution will be speaking. So that actually ought to be interesting, and it kind of piques my interest in what he's going to be talking about. So every Friday morning, 7 o'clock at the Bangkok restaurant, No Lie Brew House, they're on Hamilton. All these details are on my website on reclaimingtherepublic.org, and you can go to them. And these details are on the links page. So if you don't know where to find it, just on the right-hand side, just click on other links, and there you go. It will give you all of the details for Ed Pace's events, as well as the Friday morning, and same thing with the Northwest Grassroots movie nights and so forth. And speaking of Northwest Grassroots, on the 13th of September, they will be hosting at Darcy's again, as always, starting at 5:30, but they're going to be hosting what everything you wanted to know about the Hearst decision and how it will affect you and our economy. This is another must attend. I really, really highly recommend, because this is going to be a direct impact to you. You need to be there, and you need to be very supportive. So please remember that John and Cecily are all doing this out of public service, and they're not, you know, this isn't something that the city council pays them to do or anything else. So please take a couple extra dollars in your pocket, wallet, or what have you, so that you can contribute to supporting them. Because if they're not doing this, then how is it you're going to get this information? Because politicians, 9 times out of 10, don't like to talk about the bad news. They don't necessarily want to have you in front of them calling them out for the things that you've done. So we really need a grassroots organization like this to provide us these types of forums, events, and information. If that all makes sense, please make sure you take some sense in either greenbacks or coinage and help them out, please. Time is running out. If you want to get that romantic bouquet, you need to head up to the Sunnyvale Flower Farm up in Suncrest. And near as I can tell, they're still doing well. The ash and the smoke hasn't wilted the flowers yet. But you can check out the details and their contact information on Facebook and say, hey, do you still have some more? As the season starts to ramp down, you're going to run out of time and opportunity to go get your beautiful bouquet of flowers for that someone special that you may want to put a gleam in their eye, or just to make up for some stupid bonehead thing we have done. Anyway, moving on, I have Dr. John R. Vile coming up, not this week, probably next week. We'll have the next set of segments of a phone interview with him, and it's very interesting. We'll talk a little bit more about this, I think, during this show and the dialogue of the show today, but I just want to let you know that this is a very good, honest dialogue where we're talking about the framers and so forth, and I don't want to spoil the entire content of what we're going to discuss, but there's some things that I think are worthwhile in pointing out. We will also be pre-recording an interview with Ward Connerly in talking about, you know, his engagement in the civil rights, as well as what would America be like if we didn't have all this social engineering. I mean, it may have kept him from having to worry about creating an institute like he has. I think it's the American Civil Rights Institute, I believe, is his organization. But if we didn't do all this social engineering, his focuses may have been on something a little more positive instead of something having to fight, you know, just, I would say, negative energies coming from the government and trying to create and pit one group over another. The government was never designed to be able to pick losers and winners out of society, whether that be in business, whether that be ethnic or racial classes and so forth. They were never designed to be able to do this. And so, as I hear in my ear, it's time to go to a break. But before we do, let me just wrap up real quick. I'm also going to be having a special interview with Bob Sedak, and I'll also be on a Philadelphia radio show. So I'll talk more about those when we come back from the break. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you. Okay, so I am back. We're back. You're still there, and thank heavens you're still on the road driving and making it home. I wanted to kind of back up and go over the two last little notes before we went to break. Bob Sedak is a libertarian that hosts a show. I believe it's a one-hour show every Sunday in San Francisco, and that show airs in Sacramento and Seattle. And so we're going to kind of do a mutual interview promotion, because he just wrote a book about the secret sauce. The anti-federalists may have been right in their arguments about the evils of the Constitution, and so we'll have this discussion. It'll probably take up a show because it's kind of interesting. Some of the guests that he had had on that have kind of articulated some perspectives and so forth. And so I think you'll find that very illuminating. And we will also be talking about Republic Review. And I will be on his show as well. So he's going to come on to this show, and I'll be on his show. So if you have a notion, you can tune in to the Bob Sedak show in San Francisco. And actually, we'll provide that information on reclaimingtherepublic.org, as well as saying it over the air. And I know how hard it is, especially with the punitive enforcement now. You can't even write notes when you're driving along, so you have to come up with some way of being able to remember what it is that you need to remember if you hear something, because you can't just write or anything, because these new laws of distraction, you'll be pulled over if you get caught texting, writing, or anything like that. So the other note or worthy note that I mentioned before we went to break is that there is a early morning show in Philadelphia that has asked me to, you know, come in for an hour of their broadcast to talk about Republic Review as well. And so I want you to be aware of that. And, you know, that particular day I'm going to be getting up pretty early, because they broadcast at 8 in the morning, so that's 5 in the morning here. So I'll get up at 4, be on their show, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, I guess, and be able to answer all of their questions that they want to know and more about Republic Review. We'll see. Again, the phone number to call in, if you didn't write it down, because you can't if you're driving, it's 844-320-4299. And so, moving on, one of the things that I kind of wanted to talk about as well, because it's coming up, when's Constitution Day? September 17th. So it's just around the corner. It's a week from this Sunday. And so not sure what you plan on doing, but I just ask everybody to do their good civic duty and take time on the 17th and actually read the Constitution. It will not take you all day, and it won't even take an hour. Like I said, it's, I think, 4 pages. So it may take you a good 20 minutes or so to read, because the words may trip you up a little bit. But if you do a good, meaningful read through it, it may be 30 minutes to an hour so that you can contemplate it. But let's make the Constitution a little more centered in our lives as we move forward from this Constitution Day and on. And if you think about it, this being 2017 and the Constitutional Convention and the signing of the Constitutional Convention or the Constitution was 1787, this makes the Constitution 230 years old. So I think it's a noteworthy day and or time in our nation's history to start moving forward and centering ourselves back onto the Constitution instead of buying into the secular progressive agenda that the federal government is supreme in all things and they could do everything necessary and proper and ensuring that they are regulating commerce to the nth degree for the general welfare and defense of the people. That's all hogwash. That was never the intent and design for the federal government to have those powers. And I'm bringing you the Federalist Papers, the ratification debates. That's why we've already gone through some of them, and many of them, and all of them that I've read through state that the states are supreme in all things, not delegated. And that the federal government is limited and defined through those enumerated powers and only those enumerated powers. And the only way they can exercise any new powers is when they come to the states and say, we would like to create this Department of Interior. We would like to create the Department of Justice, the Department of Agriculture. We'd like to have this thing called the FBI. Is this okay? Can we do this? And the states would then look at the amendment and go, well, we kind of see what you're doing, but we kind of don't like that. We think that that's going to be very intrusive. Or, you know what? That would be maybe a really good thing to help us, you know, have an interstate type of legal system to ensure that everybody kind of has harmonious law enforcement. So, you know, that's for the states to decide. It's not for the federal government to assume on its own. And so anyway, I beg and plead that you start reading the Constitution, start listening to these podcast, to this show, so that you understand what we need to be doing. And again, don't forget that the Constitution Day is coming up. And as a matter of fact, the Constitution Party and the united political parties that support the Constitution, which is the Spokane County GOP, the Spokane County Libertarian Party, as well as the Spokane County Constitution Party, are all supporting this Constitution Party event. Of course, the Constitution Party is their event, but it looks like there may be a venue problem, or, you know, not a problem, but I think they're going to be doing it at the library. And so I need to find out all the details because some of the venues had fell out and I need to understand why, but we want to start moving forward to where we have a better plan and a better involvement, both from all of the political parties that support the Constitution, as well as you, the public, that want to see, you know, our elected officials and our local communities a little more centered on the Constitution so that we can, you know, promote our liberties and our sovereignty and promote the knowledge of these things. It's critical. It's very critical. And so I will move on, but next week I will have hopefully the ultimate information, and I believe it's going to be, let me pull it up here on the calendar, I believe it's the 22nd when they're planning on having this event. So actually we have 2 weeks. We'll have next week the 13th that I'll be able to give you a heads up on, and then on the 20th I'll give you the final details and everything else. Now again, I know that the Daughters of the American Revolution are doing something, and I've sent emails back, but I have never gotten a real response of what they're doing, where it is, what the, you know, or anything. And so I'm not calling them out. I just would like to be able to let you know and everybody else what is being done regarding the recognizing of the Constitution and so forth. So anyway, if you know of anything else or who to talk to with, you know, planners of events like the Daughters of the American Revolution and so forth, by all means, call me. You can call that number. And actually, I will go back to my notes and give it to you again. It's 844-320-4299. If you call in during this show, we can take that information and help promulgate the information so people can participate. Anyway, one of the things that I think is really, really important that people start understanding, and I may have talked about this before, but I want to highlight this because this is a part of the amendment process of the Constitution. After they had written the Constitution and after the first Congress had formed, once it was ratified, and this is in 1789, Madison and Sherman literally debated, argued, and I don't know if they poked each other in the eye. I can't see Madison doing that. But I know it was very heated because Madison felt it was important that when an amendment touched the actual Constitution, that they amended the Constitution in the appropriate spot and not put it at the end. What did Sherman say? Well, I'm going to get to that as soon as we get back from this heartbreak. So please stay tuned, and I'll talk more about the amendments when we get back. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're back, and I'm smiling with my white pearly teeth. And let me finish up what Madison and Sherman were talking about regarding the amendment process. Sherman basically said, hey, we don't have computers. We can't quickly and easily insert these amendments that are going to be coming down the pike in the future. And he didn't know that, you know, there wouldn't be as many as there are. Or I should say, they thought that there would be lots of amendments. They thought that the political Enlightenment would grow and grow, and that they would actually make this thing even better and better. But I don't think they realized how good it was when they ended up receiving it from the divine insights and inspiration that these men had received. However, that being said, Sherman thought that it was just important to enumerate these new amendments at the end of the Constitution. And Madison said, no, people will not understand where these things are supposed to be. And a great case in point is the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment only made changes to Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution. That is it. It did not touch Article 5 of the Constitution. And had we followed Madison's admonishments and desires to force these changes to be within the Constitution, then it would clearly change how the 17th Amendment would be enforced. And I haven't had the detailed discussion with this with Dr. Weil, but I truly believe that when you read Article 5 and the Amendment Protection Clause, that very last line that says no state shall lose its suffrage without its consent, meaning that the 17th Amendment would not be enforced upon states that rejected it. That means Utah, Georgia, and all the, I think, 8 states that have rejected the 17th Amendment, those states would not be held to having to elect or have general elections for their senators, that the state legislatures would still be able to appoint. And so, it's interesting why these states never recognize this, because when I talk to people and I ask them, well, why aren't you just still doing this? In Utah, why are you not appointing your senators instead of following the 17th Amendment? Well, we have to. And I go, the Article 5 says you don't. It says that you have to give your consent before you would lose your suffrage. And, oh, well, shoot, we didn't recognize it. We didn't realize that was there. So that's a very common case, but I think that was the exact same problem that they had back in 1913 with the 17th Amendment, is that the people that wrote it didn't understand that was what was in the 15th, or what was in Article 5. They didn't know it existed. They never read past the amendment process and understanding that there was this little line at the very end that protected states from losing their representation in the Senate, because that's what that line was for. So anyway, I just wanted to highlight the importance of the amendment process, that we understand that had amendments actually made changes to the language of the Constitution the way it was supposed to do, as Madison wanted it to do, I think we would be looking at the Constitution a lot differently. Then we wouldn't be seeing all of these other amendments. And as you look at the Washington State Constitution, you basically read verbatim the articles. And then at the end of each article, if you go online, it will tell you what it used to be and then what it used to be. So it shows you all the different versions, but the current version is what you read first. And I think that was a brilliant way of doing that, so that you could actually read the actual language instead of reading the Constitution and then having to go read the amendment to see how it changed or was applied. So I think Sherman was really wrong. I think Sherman was just a little bit more convincing in getting the persuasion of the select committee to supporting him and how amendments would be inserted into the Constitution. But anyway, that being said, last little note before I get in the conversation with Brad, the producer engineer extraordinaire here. I am setting up some plaques for tweeting purposes, for Facebook and so forth. I've got a couple already done, and I'm going to be doing some more. And when I have, I think, a good array for people, I believe that when people start tweeting these plaques to President Trump and to other political leaders, I think that these things will say everything that needs to be said, that they need to start doing their job and adhering to the Constitution, and that we're watching them. But anywho, I just will let you know when those things are ready. Now, on August 9th, getting back to my Republic Review and the strategy of, you know, convening the convention, the two presentations I gave on August 9th to the movie night, I asked Brad if he would mind kind of taking a look and watching that, and if he had any questions or any comments that he could, you know, by all means, you know, impart those insights that he got or he obtained in watching that. So, Brad, what do you got?
Well, the first thing I got from your presentation was that you made the comment, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. We, in our society today, we see so much disagreement between citizens, and oftentimes the other side doesn't seem reasonable. How do you agree with people that are totally unreasonable, aren't open to discussion of the issue?
Well, so in context to reality and in context to the lens that we see things, I think if you go into your community, you will find that there are people that disagree with you, but that it's not that they're unreasonable. Most people don't know necessarily a lot of unreasonable people. And I like to, you know, throw out the statistic that there's probably about 80% of the population that I believe are reasonable people. I think the other 20% are so polarized that they're just ensconced in their biases that they can't get over that. And so when you're dealing with those outliers, I have to say, and it kind of goes down to maybe the Covey's concepts of, you know, the if it's not important, then don't worry about it, because we can get by without that 20% outliers. Sometimes it's just not worth wrestling with pigs, because, you know, the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to get frustrated. You're going to get dirty. You're going to have to wash up. It takes a long time to get that smell off of you. But the pig loves it when you're out there wrestling with them. They just, you know, they're just happy as a pig and you know what. And so if you just leave the pigs alone, then you don't have to necessarily worry about all the extra effort that you just exerted, as well as all the effort that you have to do to clean up afterwards, and you got nothing accomplished in wrestling with pigs. So I get to a point where, you know, when you're dealing with somebody that is just so polarized and they just can't have an objective conversation, let them go. Let them go.
Okay. Another thing that you brought up.
Let me interrupt you. Yeah. What was your overall thought, first off?
I thought it was the presentation was well done, and I was very impressed with the people that you were making the presentation to. They asked some very informative questions that if you go and look at it on YouTube, you'll be impressed as well as some of the questions.
Right, and the link is actually on my reclaimingtherepublic.org website. And let me go to that while you ask the next question. I believe it's the Take Action. Yeah, if you go to Take Action, you'll actually find the slide presentations that I used for both of those presentations that night. And right underneath the second slide presentation is the link to the YouTube page, the Reclaiming the Republic YouTube page, where you can watch that video. Go ahead.
You mentioned that knowledge is power. If we know what the Constitution says, we're going to demand of our people in D.C. that they act in a constitutional manner. But the people in D.C., they know how the system, the shadow government or whatever you want to say, they know how the system runs, and they want to control the power that they have. They control. So how do we make them act in a constitutional way when they don't even believe in the constitutional process?
Well, so we may not be able to get them act in the constitutional way until they recognize that their game, the gig is over. And so the thing right now that, you know, is totally empowering them and emboldening them in what they're doing is the fact that the states are doing nothing. The states are not stepping up. In the relationship of government and, you know, family type of relationship, the states are the parents and the general government is the child. And if the parents ever stand up, the child will take notice and go, oh, well, hold on, we've done something, because it goes to our core principles. If you read the Declaration of Independence, if you read the Federalist Papers, if you go through the ratification debates, clearly the framers constantly said that the people are the fountain of power and that the states are the ones that have the advantage over the general government because of, one, their direct association with the people, as well as their constitutional positions within the contract of the Constitution. And so the states literally can direct and start standing up and getting that attention first. And we can bring back, when we come back after this break, you know, what else is the states can do to getting their attention and getting this general government to behave better. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Okay, so we're back with Brad and Brad's insights and questions, and let's just go ahead into your next question. I know that we could easily ponder lots of these, so let's let the last one go. And what's your next question?
Do you feel that the President of the United States actually knows the powers that are vested in him by the Constitution, or... As long as I've been alive, it doesn't seem like our presidents actually know what the Constitution says about what their powers are.
Well, right. And I think that's probably when I was referring to when I said the president's primary job is to execute faithfully the laws, the constitutional laws of the Constitution. And I don't think that many presidents know, because it has slid down this path where presidents have used EOs or executive orders to use as legislation. And the intent of the executive orders was never to use that as legislation. It was only the first executive order was Washington proclaiming that America, you know, have a day of thanksgiving for and recognizing the divine hand of providence in bestowing upon us our Constitution. That's what Thanksgiving every November is supposed to be about, is recognizing our Constitution and not recognizing the pilgrims and so forth. So we'll get into that in a couple of future shows. But that was the intent of the EO. And that particular EO was directed by Congress that he proclaimed that. And so there are proclamations that the president can do, but he should do that in concert with what Congress feels necessary. But the executive orders are typically only used for how we are going to enforce a given constitutional law. And he should never, never sign an unconstitutional law and never enforce an unconstitutional law. So he should understand the Constitution better than he does.
Now, the states determine what or what is not constitutional.
Correct.
And a number of states, when it comes to the so-called Affordable Care Act, turned down some federal monies and did not institute the health exchanges. So they were saying that, in their opinion, in other words, they were saying that they feel that this act was unconstitutional. So they were trying to tell everyone that the ACA was unconstitutional. They just didn't go about it the right way, right?
No, so you're correct. The problem is that the states have felt like they've always had to use the court. They've been convinced that the court system is their only vehicle in fighting the federal government. And so one of the things I point out in my presentation, I point this out in my executive summary, is that when Madison and Jefferson received and saw and caught wind of the Sedition Act, the first thing they did was they appealed to the states to step up and go, hey, this is unconstitutional. We cannot allow the federal government to do this. We need to coalesce and we want you to join us. And that was what the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions were. They weren't calling to amend the Constitution, nor were they calling for nullification. They were calling for the states to join them in rebuking the federal government. And what ended up happening was the other states neglected to do their job. And because they neglected to do their job, those other state legislatures in the following 2 years, the Federalists were basically pushed out of office. And the Anti-Federalists, or I should say the Republicans, which was created by Madison and Jefferson, they took office afterwards to basically rebuke the federal government for what they were doing.
So what's it going to take to actually really get the ball rolling? I think it's basic education of the populace. And since the Constitution is not taught in our public schools anymore, how do we get this message to the masses that we need to get back to a constitutional form of government?
Well, so this is a very long answer, and I'll try to make it as short as possible. We don't have time to educate everybody. Every time I get into this argument, educators believe that that's what we got to do. We got to educate everybody. John Rowland of Texas and the Constitution Society, John Vile, and everybody that is involved in some type of constitutional thing, they all say we got to educate everybody. We do not have the time, folks. So what we have to do is we have to educate our leaders to understand their job and to act, because that's all the time we've got. We only have enough time, and I believe in cancer education. I talk about this in my second presentation, but cancer education is when all of a sudden people see something happening and they go, what's going on? Oh my goodness, that's cancer? And then they'll go and I've never heard of this, and they'll go and actually they'll Google it, they'll read, and they will force themselves to get involved and get educated, because they're going to learn about the true hybrid constitutional republic that we have, the state's powers that actually the states possess. And can they do this? Yes, they can. And they're going to read the Federalist Papers and the ratification debates, because people will, you know, be blown away that what they've learned all this time was a facade. It was all made up to support the secular and the nationalist agenda so that they could keep on centralizing powers and pulling everything into D.C. so that they could basically get us primed for a major collapse or a political expediency cause of discarding the Constitution, so they can move us into a better form of controlling government instead of our Constitution that guarantees our inalienable rights and so forth. So anyway.
And the last thing I think we got time for, maybe, that I have a question about is when we're talking about like a constitutional convention, we're not that is for amending the Constitution. Describe the difference between that and actually auditing the Constitution.
Okay. And I know I actually covered this on the show, but the best way to articulate this is that if you are going to convene a convention for amending, rewriting, making any types of changes, in other words, you're going to put the Constitution into review for changing purposes or putting aside and creating a new constitution, that requires an application, which Article 5 of the Constitution says, if you're going to make any changes to this, then you need to have two-thirds of the states, which is 34 states, apply for an Article 5 process, which means that they're going to convene a convention to amend, or again, to make wholesale changes to the Constitution. And there's lots of people that are concerned with that. However, that is when you're actually opening up the hood of the Constitution and you're going to work on it. An audit of the Constitution means that you're going to look at the Constitution, look at what the federal government does and says, oh, you know what? What you're doing over here, this healthcare stuff, you know, we didn't tell you here in the Constitution you could do this. So where did you get this authority? Oh, you assumed this authority. In other words, you usurped our powers and authority and took it upon yourself to do. Okay, well, sorry, you can't do that anymore. And there are vehicles, and I'll get into that next, but the whole audit process literally is examining everything that the federal government is doing and whether it exists in the Constitution. To be very clear, some people will read that Congress has the power to, you know, control new territories and so forth. The Department of Interior was never designed in the Constitution as an executive department. For over 50 years, half a century, Congress was able to manage the territories of the state and ensure that new territories were able to come into the state. The whole problem was with the Department of Interior, they started basically holding on to states unconstitutionally. Everything that the Department of Interior has been doing has really been unconstitutional by holding back lands and saying, well, this is still federal lands, this is still federal property. The Constitution in Article 1, Section 8 is very clear what the federal government can use for property, and it's only for the necessary and proper things that they need to do, such as for post offices, such as ports and facilities for commerce to flow into the nation. And the largest piece of land for federal purposes is for military training and so forth. So if you go and read Article 1, Section 8, and I think it's subsection 17, it actually creates these limitations on what the property can be, but they cannot possess state property for environmental purposes, for parks and recreation, for forestry, for whatever reason, for all of these, the plethora of reasons that they come up with since the Department of Interior's existence, they're all unconstitutional. There's nothing in the Constitution that granted them the ability to do this as well as making this an executive department. Congress, strictly, their only role was to ensure that there was a process for new territories to apply for statehood and so forth. And I've just gone down this one rabbit hole of one unconstitutional power, and that's the very first one, the Department of Interior. Please stay tuned next week. We will have Dr. Vile and his three segments and our discussions with him. And I think you're going to really enjoy this. So we'll be back in Reclaiming the Republic again next week on Wednesday. Thank you very much, and you have a God-blessed weekend. Thank you.